Hello and welcome to 105 The Ticket's video game podcast from Cold Omaha. I'm Henry Bell, and joining me in studio today are Tom Schreier and Max Hamilton. We're going to be discussing the decline of split-screen local co-op play and current games we've been playing as we wait for E3 to get started. And we're also going to be talking about the big news this week. Valve has rolled out a refund system for purchases on Steam, and I'm really curious what you guys think about this.
You know, I think this is something a lot of people have been waiting for, and whenever a company such as Steam, which is producing all these indie games and making these things that, you know, don't get a lot of coverage available to the general public, when they make something like returns possible, even with strict rules in place, it's a great positive step for the consumers. And at the end of the day, I don't think it's going to have a negative impact, because if you make a quality game, people try it out, they're going to keep it. If a lot of these greenlit projects are showing up and they're not totally finished, they're buggy as heck, they're not, you know, sold as advertised, even though there's those disclaimers that, you know, this may be an alpha or it's not, you know, a fully funded, completed project, I think it's fair that, you know, these developers are subject to direct consumer feedback by people speaking with their wallets.
I think you're right. I mean, it kind of gives me flashbacks to games like, I don't know if you guys were big, I believe this was Super Nintendo fans, but they had a terrible, terrible game called Cheetah Men for that console. And famously, the game just ends. Just mid-level, the game just ends.
Did anyone think that was going to be good, though? It's called Cheetah Men.
Well, to be fair, we're talking about an era where there were a lot of games being developed, and most of them were translations, so I couldn't say. But that said, you know, my point is, you know, if you don't necessarily know what you're getting, especially in the era of Assassin's Creed Unity and you know, some of the releases we've seen in the last year, a game at launch that is not playable, you should have the opportunity to tell the developer with your wallet that you don't think it's okay to release a broken game, you know, and I think that's really important. And there are, I would like to mention, there are a couple of caveats. In order to qualify for a refund, there are two criteria you have to meet. One, you have to have spent 2 hours or less playing the game, and also you can't have owned the game for more than 14 days. So any old titles, like, I know I was really bummed. I bought a game, about 2 years ago, I think, called The Showdown Effect, which at the time I was playing on a Windows 7 computer, did not realize it required Windows 8 to run. Go figure. And actually didn't get to play it until I finally ended up getting a Windows 8 tablet that could run it. And
was it worth the wait?
No, it's not even that good of a game. It's really upsetting because the worst part about it is the reason the game's not very good is the community's dead. It's almost like the matchmaking is terrible. And so basically I'm just SOL because I didn't have Windows 8. And I guess, yeah, I know, read the system requirements, but how often is the operating system a relevant part of system requirements? Like, really? And so I think it's great that you're able to actually get a refund. And also, depending on who your credit card provider is, I believe it's with Visa and MasterCard, you can actually get money refunded back to your bank account. It does not just store credit.
So it doesn't go right back into your Steam wallet?
Not necessarily. I think you get to choose. Like, it's okay. part of the process. And I've been told that it's like about a day and a half for your first response from Steam, and then another half a week or so before the money will show up in your account/Steam wallet.
And that's actually, you know, incentive to not abuse the system. But is this something that you see yourself taking advantage of often? Not in a negative way, but I mean, you know, for me, I can actually see myself testing some of these greenlit games, or perhaps that ARK game, that dinosaur survival game that just launched. It's kind of got a steep entry point of $25 for such a, you know, a small, fairly unknown indie game. I could see myself trying it out, and if it's no good, then just get the refund.
Yeah, I do think so. I mean, I think it's telling that a lot of developers have kind of said that, especially the ones who are disgruntled with the new refund system, they have said that, you know, people may use this as a demo, and I'm totally okay with that. I would love it if actual, like, free demos came back, because
absolutely,
I think a lot of people don't really know what they're getting into until they've purchased it.
Well, what I was going to ask, there's no, like, limit to how many you can actually return back, right? It's literally 2 hours.
Not that I know of. And this is a huge improvement. Just to be clear, there was technically a way to get refunds previously, but it was basically you had to just complain and complain and complain to Steam, and they would say, we will do this for you one time. You are not eligible for any future refunds. So, or you could do a chargeback, I guess, if you're a real jerk.
How often do you purchase like a $60 game there. I guess the my
on Steam?
Yes.
Well, I use Steam the right way, so never.
Yeah, and so I guess my point being is like, I suppose you don't want to sink a ton of money into games you don't play, but I thought part of Steam was kind of like, look, you may get a $10 game that you really would value at $60, let's say, because you really liked it, and at the same time, you might get a game that's, you know, for $10 that you has no value to you at all. Again, you may purchase it's the wrong operating system, or you just don't like it. I thought kind of the point of Steam was they give you good prices, but you also may sink money into games that suck.
Well, I mean, I think it's important to keep in mind Steam is not making the games that you're referring to. So, no, I don't think at all. I mean,
they're simply an electronic distributor. The point of Steam, for anyone that doesn't have it, go check it out, download it, it's free. It's a distributor of PC games, and a lot of these are cross-platform. The selling point, though, is that they can heavily discount things, and they have weekly sales, and sometimes, like just today, the Steam Summer Sale launched, and you're seeing games up to 90% off.
Right.
And we're talking, you know, recent releases and sometimes even brand new releases where you can find you know, some great recent hits for around $10, where, you know, a few months back they might have been 50 or 60. So,
and I don't understand why a bad developer should be rewarded for the goodwill that's been garnered from another sure. developer completely unrelated to them.
Sure, I guess that's true. I guess I always thought of it as something you kind of buy in bulk because they're cheaper, I guess, and so you it's like hit and miss, but you're spending $10 as opposed to $60.
I'd say that's more akin to something like the Humble Bundle. And okay. it's worth mentioning, you are not eligible for refunds from pretty much any vendor outside of Steam, unless specifically mentioned. I didn't see any. So that means anything through GOG, you know, Green Man Gaming, anything like that, Humble Bundle, none of that stuff is eligible for refund, probably because their pricing is so different from Steam's.
Why doesn't Steam just have, and you alluded to this earlier in the podcast, but why don't they just have a like demo system or like so that they don't have to constantly have this transaction going back and forth, I guess?
Well, to be clear, they do have demos on Steam. It's the developers. It's at the behest of the developer. I mean, you have, as a developer, you have the option to make a free demo.
Sure, sure.
And they elect not to. So, I mean, the demo, though, we haven't really seen demos for a very, very long time. I mean, I'm trying to think of, can you guys, PT, which is not a demo, it's a promo. Yeah. So, I mean, can you guys think of the last demo that you played?
There's quite a few demos, and they're pretty popular on consoles. On PC, I don't see them too often.
I feel like there's a new name for demo, and it's free-to-play game. I mean, it's just, they don't do demos. You just get the base game for free, and then you can do microtransactions paying for the full game.
PlayStation is coming forth with a new deal where you download the entire game for free, you get as far as you can in the first 2 hours, and then if you like it, a little pay window is going to pop up and say, hey, you know, if you want to continue your progress, buy the entire game. So you have full access to the game in that first 2 hours. And I think, you know, that's going to be a nice hybrid version of demos, because before, demos were pretty limited. You might not have gotten very far in the game. It's only what the developers specifically wanted you to see. But, you know, with this kind of program in place, you're going to be able to test out the features you most wanted to try.
Either way, though, like, the first 2 hours of most games are good, right? Most people go into it and feeling good.
Well, yes and no. Actually, I could think of a lot of games that the first 2 hours are the worst part. I mean, tutorials in particular. It really depends on what slice of the game they decide to present to you. Is it, you know, after you've unlocked your base abilities, or are they teaching you how to swing a sword in the demo, you know?
Sure.
And on top of that, is it a game where you need all like a tutorial to be included to learn how to play? I don't know. It's interesting because there are a bunch of developers that are claiming, you know, they're not happy with this. They're claiming that they're seeing huge refund numbers, especially smaller developers of what I would consider, you know, one play it once and never touch it again games. I know that the developer of Octodad said they've been hit really, really hard, and I would argue, you know, tough, because Octodad is totally a gimmick game. I'm sure it was very hard to program and all that, but that's a game that succeeded off of the back of YouTube, not off of the back of a great game.
And what I would add on top of that is that, you know, the reason they're seeing all these increased returns is because they're seeing people come and try out their game that wouldn't have touched it otherwise, and I'm sure that they're at least gaining some revenue from that, because every single person that goes and tries out their game knowing they can get a refund if they don't like it is not going to automatically return it. Some of them, I'm sure, keep it.
Well, and let's be honest, they call those kinds of games PewDiePie bait, as in PewDiePie bait, for a reason, and it's because the kind of people who are buying those games in bulk, playing them once, then never touching them again, aren't even thinking about refunds because they bought it with their allowance or their parents' money. I mean, they're children.
Yeah. And I guess Steam, or I mean, sorry, developers are at an advantage with Steam because it's not like the old days where you had, let's say, a Blockbuster. I was thinking back to when I played a demo. Well, it's not a demo, but I used to rent games kind of like this, right? Sure. And the other thing, too, is you have the resale and kind of that secondary market that essentially has gone away, right? I mean, it's not like you're sharing code with your friends or something like that. Everyone kind of has to buy the game now.
Sure.
And so I see this more as kind of a developer who's not very good, who's like, yeah, I kind of got away with, you know.
Now, to be clear, I actually really like the developer of the Octodad games, but yeah, I agree. Because when you have a gimmicky game, you pay the price. And the same goes for, there have been developers complaining that 2 hours is too long of a window because their game is less than 2 hours. As far as I'm concerned, if your game is less than 2 hours, you better give me the option to refund it. Because I would be furious. I've had that happen to me before. I was so angry. I wish I could get my money back for Monument Valley. Look, don't get me wrong. That game is wonderful. But it's 10 levels. It took me an hour to beat it. And it was $2.
Well, you gotta buy the DLC and get the extra levels.
The DLC is $3 and it's only 8 levels. We've had my discussion about the value of DLC, and the DLC is worth less than the base game.
I do think, though, that when you play a game that is as visually pleasing as that, or, you know, if you just kind of value and content are different for everyone.
Yeah, sure. That's fine. And maybe you're forgetful and you can replay through the puzzles again and still get the same feeling. They are complicated puzzles. It's the kind of thing you could get confused on. It's like an Escher painting that you're walking around in. And so I guess I can see that to each their own, sure. But I'm saying for me, as a consumer, I think I should have the right to say, I'm not satisfied with the product you gave me for the money you gave me, and I don't feel that it was clearly stated how long this game was when I got into it. If they had told me from the start, this is an hour-long game, like, when you click it, warning, this game is only an hour, I would have been like, nope. But instead, I'm just saddled with an app that, you know, every app I've purchased on my phone, I use all the time.
Okay.
Except for that, because it's a one-time playthrough, and now it just sits.
Right. I have found that there's very little replay value in a lot of the mobile gaming experiences that are now, maybe not pay to play or win, but pay once and
define mobile gaming experiences. Because I mean, most of the games that I play on mobile are ports, and they have tons of replay value.
Well, I was strictly thinking of Monument Valley, Sailor's Dream, Year Walk.
Any non-puzzle games? Because puzzle games traditionally don't have any replay value.
I suppose that is fair. Come back to me.
Sure, okay.
I might have some examples.
Yeah, I mean, so here's what it comes down to, really, for me, is that consumers have always traditionally had the right to return a product if they're unsatisfied with it, and the fact that Steam has just been basically given a pass for this long, I think it's really good that they have come forward, really without too much prodding, like recently, and just kind of said, we're implementing this system. And I think that Steam has been so unbalanced in the favor of developers for so long, especially since the advent of Greenlight and like sellable Unity assets, that it's really important to let the consumers have the power back. The power should be in the hand of the consumers. If we can't vote with our wallets, you know, if we can't stop certain people from pre-ordering games, why do we even, you know, if we can't stop them from pre-ordering, we have to give them the option for a refund, because you don't know what you're getting and you end up with Assassin's Creed Unity, and no one should have to lose $60 to a scam like that.
So, right, and can you imagine how many refunds there would have been had that even been an option for the people that pre-ordered that?
I desperately would like to see the first AAA flop since this system has been put into place. I really think that you're going to have companies thinking twice. I mean, can you imagine Colonial Marines?
Oh, yeah.
Can you imagine if the Aliens Colonial Marines game had allowed refunds? It would have been like a 99% refund rate.
Absolutely. Did not ship as billed at all.
Oh, God, it was so bad. Well, not just that, but it was just unplayable. I mean, it was just a patently bad first-person shooter. But that's a whole... I could go on.
Different
about
podcast.
That. Yeah.
And I know you're not a console guy, but Max, do you think this goes to like Xbox and PlayStation because of what Steam's doing, or do you think that they see this as like a separate system and they don't really feel...
I don't think consoles will ever, at least in the foreseeable future, offer refunds like that, especially when there's such a brick and mortar aspect involved. I mean, that starts touching on federal laws, because you have, like, for example, if you buy a game and you want to return it to Target, it cannot have been opened because you could have taken that disc and copied it. The only thing that a retail store will do is, like, let's say it's scratched or it turns out it was broken in the case. Sure. So you make some case as to why you should be able to return it. They'll just exchange it for the exact same thing, and they're going to open everything up and, like, make sure that the seal's broken so you can't go exchange it somewhere else. Sure. They're very careful.
Well,
about
but
that.
What about the digital distribution? Because, of course, you can't return opened products.
I could see, like, the Xbox I could see Live how they could implement a program like Steam, but I don't think they're going to do it, because consoles have never had to deal with returns or refunds or you know, issues of any sort. They're always just trying to put a Band-Aid on a gaping wound with free DLC, or, you know, like with the new Halo 5 game coming out, they're, as an apology for the Master Chief Collection, they're releasing all the DLC maps for free. Sure. And they gave away ODST. You know, they don't address the problem at the root, and that is giving a product that works and allowing returns, yes, for those that feel wronged.
Yeah, absolutely. So overall, though, I mean, I think we all agree this is a great thing. I mean, we are all consumers. None of us are game developers. But, you know, I know that I can see potential for abuse here. I think it's up to Steam to kind of lock down the system a little bit more. Maybe say, depending on the length of the game, that if you do have, or depending on what type of game it is, if you do have the end game achievement, I've heard a lot of people suggesting maybe that would disqualify you. Though then you run into
issues
like
what if I speed run, gone home, and get the final achievement? Do I still like it to return my product after 5 minutes?
I think you should have known better than to buy Gone Home. Yeah, no, fair enough, and that's kind of what it gets at. But here's the thing. I would play through all of Gone. When I played through Gone Home, I kept waiting for something cool to happen, and then nothing did, and then I did wish I could get my money back, because I was like, wow, this was not...
I mean,
this was nothing. I kept waiting for it to get good, and it just never did.
That's catered to, I feel like, a very different audience than you two. Like, there's some, I mean, I think there is.
Well, I don't know about that. Max is a big fan.
Oh, okay. You like that game? Because I think it's, I mean, I think it's for a certain crowd, you know, I've gone home. I don't know.
I enjoy.
I mean, you were defending it off air earlier.
I was, yes. I bought it for a discount because everyone said, you know, don't go in at the $20 purchase point.
Sure.
I bought it for $5 on a Steam sale. Was the story predictable? Yes. I won't spoil it for anyone that wants to go through it. I was more interested in experiencing it because at the time when it released, there was the big debate, you know, is this a game? Is it not a game?
And hashtag walking simulator.
Yes. And I think it would be interesting to, you know, in a future podcast to round up some games of this sort and kind of debate their merits or not. I went into it more as a interactive story experience and a piece of art, I suppose, and I just wanted to see what the message was and experience it. Was I expecting a big game with a lot of replayability? Obviously not. I did my research. But I did enjoy the experience itself. I didn't find it negative. That said, I didn't pay $20 for it, and a lot of people went in paying full price, not really knowing what they were getting into. And I think at the time, had Steam had the refunds in place, there would have been quite a few of them.
I mean, I hear you, although I would say, too, though, that, you know, there is value to games that are art house style. If you want to see a game that does that well, look at a game like 30 Flights of Loving. That is, in my opinion, it's a great game. It's funny, and it's actually stylized. It's actually doing stuff you could not just do in, like, a book or a basic documentary or, like, with a GoPro. I mean, that's the thing that I felt about Gone Home, is I think it would have been just as well done in film as in a game, if not better done in film. And so I would say something like 30 Flights of Loving, where they have, like, artistic flares and aspects to it that you can't really do in a movie or in at least a low budget indie movie.
Sure.
That's where I really think that the art house style stuff shines. And I agree. We should do a full topic on this sometime. I don't know if I'd necessarily call Journey an art house game or like a walking simulator. I really feel like that was much more of a platformer with like a procedurally generated world. It was certainly artsy, but I think it's important to give them a lot more credit than something like Gone Home. I mean, for God's sake, you can't even jump in Gone Home. You can't do anything.
What would
they
jumping
don't
do in that game?
I mean, add there's some there's, level of player
there's
agency.
A lot of AAA games that you can't jump in.
No,
but no.
And my point
aside,
is that you have no agency in that game. You're going from A to B, then from B to C, then from C to D. You have no say in the order. I mean, it's just.
A disclaimer: I have not played Journey yet. I just always kind of got the, you know, artsy story over content vibe from it. So
I mean, I would say the same thing about Wind Waker, but Wind Waker has amazing gameplay.
No, yes. I am curious about this, and then we can move on. But have you seen the Cuphead game? Like the card, and that's obviously more than a walking simulator.
I've seen, you know, some video of it. Obviously, no one's gotten hands on, but it does look like a pretty cool throwback for a side scrolling little adventure.
I mean, that's
game.
An action game, obviously, straight up. But like, I think someone like that, I'm glad they're introducing it because it's something we haven't seen before.
Oh, this is crazy. This is the first I'd seen of this. Oh, my God. It looks like Popeye.
Yeah. No, or like
it's like
Mickey
a throwback
Mouse.
To, the classic
this
Disney cartoons
it's
and things
so,
like
it's
that.
It's so cool. Yeah. Like, I'm so excited for that. And it's beyond, as long as they do the action well.
Yeah. What is this, a 2D brawler?
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. This looks great. But I'm excited.
It's like unique bosses and stuff because, again, they're creating their own art and they're I suppose there's no standard, right, you know, for it.
It's not like it's licensed or based on anything. Yeah. They can do whatever they want with it. I think they're obviously drawing inspiration, like you said, from those old Mickey Mouse cartoons.
So cool.
And it kind of gives me a bit of a creepy vibe, you know,
with some of the character designs. I'll be honest, though. The character designs also make me a little uncomfortable because they kind of also harken back to a not-so-happy time in Mickey Mouse.
Some of the caricatures.
And so I'm sure that, it's 2015. I'm sure that they'll be very respectful and everything. But I will say that I think that's part of what I do feel slightly on edge. I have a slight feeling of foreboding, like my racist uncle is hiding behind one of these pictures. But we'll see.
Yeah, I mean, I'm assuming that because I think it's going to be a decently big release. Like,
Sure. Yeah. Like I said, it's 2015. There's no, but I'm just agreeing with Max that I do get a weird feeling when I look at the art style, and I don't know why it is. I just feel a little bit uncomfortable, and I'm not.
Yeah,
sure.
I think it's meant to be that way, though. In some ways, again, it's maybe because it's new, or maybe because like you have to create intrigue. You have to create some like, I guess some anticipation for something new if you release a game like that.
Sure. Well, anyways, regardless, that's a game that I will not be refunding. I don't think that looks very promising. So I think I'll be checking that out. But let's move along here. And I wanted to talk to you guys a little bit about this long, slow death of split screen. We heard in a Kotaku article, I think it was today, about how Halo 5 will not be featuring split-screen co-op for multiplayer or the single-player campaign. And, I mean, a lot of people are just saying, you know, just do online multiplayer. That's the new replacement. It's just the new version. Personally, I disagree. What do you guys think?
I agree with what you had to say, that it does matter if you're playing with other people, and that it was kind of like your point with the bus, where you said waiting for the bus, and we had Kyle in here. You know, there's something about that that's exciting.
Yeah.
So I mean I grew up with your, you know, your GoldenEye and stuff like that, and I do enjoy it to this day. Probably wouldn't play a multiplayer game like that just because you get kind of sick of, once you get used to having a full screen, you know, sick of a quarter screen or whatever, the little.
Really though, I mean, we play games on our phones. Like, a screen size really that big of an? I feel like
I think it just depends on how well they do it. Well, that's true, but the game that really bothered me the most was the Ghost Recon games, that you lose your character model and sometimes the gun if it was first person, and all you'd get is the reticule on the screen. It just really kind of took away the immersion and experience for me.
Sure, but I don't think I would cite some of the worst split screen in history.
No,
right,
I know.
Now.
That's,
I mean,
fair.
We're talking about Halo here.
Right.
I mean, Halo without co-op, it takes a lot of the history and the fun out of it. I've played, let's see, up through Halo 3 to the end, and the co-op is my favorite aspect of it. I go back and I play on Legendary with my cousins all the time, and it's the only time I play Halo nowadays is co-op, because I don't care to play it on my own.
I'd say my personal view on it is that it's not going to affect me directly, because I'm kind of past the stage of you know, couch co-op and things like that, and everything's so connected and online. But I think they're doing a very big disservice to the people that purchase it, that, you know, are in college or high school in the dorm room parties and things like that, where, you know, that's the biggest time where you have a big group of people together. You want to play some party games, four player split screen, what have you. And, you know, it's not going to be an option anymore.
And I mean, I feel like you say that, you know, it doesn't really affect you, but I mean, doesn't it only not really affect you because it's such a rare option? I mean, surely you have friends over that like video games every once in a while.
Yeah,
so,
I guess, you know, when I am mostly playing with friends, we're all at our respective homes, it's late at night, and well, we have our headsets on. And
I mean, that's very different from hanging out with your friends and playing video games.
Yeah, I guess when I'm hanging out with friends, we're not playing games, is for me personally.
Just to be clear, I'm a huge advocate of online, like, online play. I love it. You know, I can play with my friends and family from home, don't have to deal with, you know, having to drive back after we hang out and all that, and I can drink at home and not worry about the drive again, same difference. And so, you know, I just don't think that online really is the same. I mean, the difference between, to me, I couldn't have played games like GoldenEye without co-op. And I feel like there's something to the feeling of screen looking, you cheater, or like, you know, pulling your friend pulls your controller out in the middle of a Mortal Kombat match. I mean, it doesn't even have to strictly be split screen. I feel like what we're really seeing is local co-op is going away.
But I think that Smash, Diablo, Mortal, like those games aren't when it's
Diablo
literally not.
Does Diablo have local co-op on console?
Yeah, at least the Xbox One does.
Wow, I didn't know that. Cool. Yeah, I've only played it on PC, so.
Yeah, so no, I mean, a game like that has localized and online as well. But I think when you're literally not splitting the screen, Mortal Kombat's always going to have the option to play with two players. I think the days of, you know, three or four are going away.
Sure.
I agree in some sense. So, you know, playing Halo, we used to split it up, force players and go play online. And part of our fun was just like messing with people who were online because we were all sitting in the same room having fun.
They didn't have their teams.
Yeah.
As elite as ours.
And sports games aren't going to change. Again, you're always going to Madden and NHL.
Well, we'll see, you know, never know. And if things do really go towards like a more PC centric thing and you don't have the box in your living room, you might be playing online with friends. I mean, most of the big, you know, tournaments for sports games and stuff are just strictly online.
Yeah.
It's not like you're all going to a center for a big convention as much.
No, that's true. I still think that's going to be, it's going to be a long time from now if it ever happens.
I think so too. Yeah. I just think we're seeing the trend now. And to be clear, the article about Halo 5 in particular is talking about how they're quote unquote being forced to take it out because the Xbox One cannot handle running two split half-size screens at 1080p 60, which I find, well, not shocking, but just so, so disappointing. I mean, I hardly think that split screen should suffer because their hardware is so weak.
I mean, to be fair, I think people, if you don't grow up with it, though, and maybe this is getting to a bit bigger problem, but if you don't grow up to it,
if you're playing Halo 5, you grew up with split screen. It's the fifth Halo game.
Yeah, I suppose if you're a kid, though, who's, you know, turned 18 or whatever, or a teenage kid, that may be your first Halo game. Or maybe you were exposed to it, you know, sparingly, but if you're not used to split screen, it is different. I mean,
if you're not the market that the game is being made for, if you've never played a Halo game before,
but look at the
icing on the cake. We're talking about the fans they're trying to draw back in after the fiasco of Master Chief Collection here, not someone who's coming in cold.
4's multiplayer was not as good. The levels and stuff.
The multiplayer was fine. I think the issue was with the weekly content being fairly lackluster. The 10 episode season or whatever the heck they did with their
sure, but let's focus on the reason for the death of this split screen in Halo is the consoles just aren't powerful enough.
I don't know if that's a good enough excuse for him, though. I mean, look at Call of Duty that lives off of the split screen and the co-op zombie. You think they're going to get rid of that?
Correct me if I'm mistaken, but doesn't that run at 30 frames per second on each screen? Like, I'm pretty sure that the modern solution is that they cut the frame rate in half if you have two screens, which is not a solution. I mean, it's better than nothing, especially since console gamers don't seem to mind 30 frames per second. But the fact that the hardware can't... I mean, I have a very old setup at home right now. I'm for anybody interested, I'm running 2 NVIDIA 550 Ti's in SLI, and I can play anything I need to, and I have two monitors, and I have, you know, 1080p video streaming at 60 frames per second from YouTube in the background while I'm playing The Witcher 3, and even with my old system, when I play The Witcher 3 on medium settings, I'm fine. I'm running it at like 50 to 60 frames per second.
You don't have couch play, right? I mean, how often would you split that up, or do you?
Well, The Witcher 3 isn't...
Well, no, I'm saying, but if you had a shooter, you know, I mean, you had Halo.
My point is that I'm always splitting it. I have two monitors.
Yeah. I wonder if it's different with a game, though. YouTube video doesn't have like the... for example, the variations of, obviously you're looking around in a video game. There's a lot of like unknowns, I suppose, for a processor. Again, I don't know how a computer processes, but I'm trying to think of, there's a difference between a YouTube video and a video game, right?
Well, yes, depending on what the video game is showing you. If it's like a CG cutscene, you know, then yeah, not necessarily. But yeah, you're right, because it's pre-rendered. But I mean, I how often on your computer do you tab out of one game and open another? I do it all the time. I mean, and then they're both running. I mean, they're not rendering simultaneously, sure, but I'm also rendering it in higher resolution at a higher frame rate, and I'm on two full-size screens, not on tiny, you know, and they're also probably, you know, well, I guess it depends on the TV you're rendering on. And so I don't know. I feel like, yes, I'm really going to miss split screen, because the only time that I touch console, in my opinion, split screen and couch co-op are the only saving grace of consoles. I don't see any other benefit to a console.
And what I'm saying is, like I said, Diablo, you know, like a Mario Party, obviously, you know, Super Smash Brothers, stuff like that, Madden, that's not going away. Like, those are going to be couch games. I think your first-person shooters really are what's affected
here. And third-person.
For the console crowd,
I mean, anything
I will
that actually has, it's split-screen games that are being affected, to be clear. You're not talking about split-screen games. They're not really relevant to this, so.
Yeah, I'm just saying couch play isn't going away. That's what I was saying.
Fair enough. Yeah. Local co-op.
I would like to step in and interject and defend the console crowd, because we don't want to all come off as PC elitists.
Hey, I have a console.
I know. I have a PS4 and a gaming laptop. But, you know, the benefit to console, just as a side note, for me has always been like, a game releases, you know it's going to work. You don't have to worry about upgrading your system. Like,
that's not accurate. Games released for console that don't work all the time. Unity.
Well,
I mean,
that's not
Master
what I meant.
Chief
I mean,
collection.
You know, I you mean, meet the standard, the required running operating system, things like that, you know, you're going to hit that. They're going to maybe have to patch things, surely, but
I mean, if I had bought a computer a year ago, I would know that games would run on it, too. I mean,
it's, no, that's fine. It's just, you know, it's a cheaper, you know, it's casual, it's easy to get into, and
you don't have to get a graphics card.
Plug it
example,
in,
you
slap the disc
game
in, and you're good to go for the next, well, the life of the console. So
sure, fair enough. So I guess if you don't want to have to, you know, learn anything about gaming, then that works for you. You can just slap a disc in, it'll be like a Blu-ray player with a controller. But, you know, I like to not have to compromise gameplay like split screen because the hardware is inferior. Because you can't run everything. If you could run everything, then no problem. Then we wouldn't be seeing them stripping features from games because the hardware can't handle it.
But I think,
and that's on Microsoft. But you know,
well, it's
again,
on,
but
it's
who,
on Bungie in this case, right?
Well, I mean the
they choose
I've figured
to,
the people
I guess it's
that provided
on both
the
of
console.
Yeah, actually, I don't even know if Bungie's making the new one. But
no, it's 343. Bungie.
So, sorry,
has nothing to do
I apologize.
With it.
But that said,
so I mean, it is on Bungie. They gave
but
up the property.
It's on whoever decided to develop it for console.
But
I mean,
it's just I think if you're very serious about, you know, winning a Halo match, for example, you want a full screen. Like, I think people just don't like split screen as much. I mean, again, we grew up with it.
I
stuff
think
like that,
that
but
that's, I mean, you're going to need to give more support for that than just you think.
I mean, you play it. It plays differently. You obviously see it from a different angle. You're not. It's
how
not
do
how
you play with your friend who's at your house if there's not split screen? I mean, who cares?
You would have to
who
play
cares if
game
you have the whole if you can see the whole screen if you can't even play the see if there's no screen to see because your friend and you aren't playing together.
Yeah, I suppose it's not going to the Madden analogy, it's not stripping, like, you know, couch play from that game. That would be much more dramatic in my mind.
I mean, they are stripping couch play from Halo here, period.
Yeah.
And so I think that's a really big deal. Obviously, I'm in the minority on this one. I thought that you guys would be a little bit more in step with me. But
I care about the co-op. I don't care about it in multiplayer play. I guess that's the way
I'm going
with that.
Maybe because the only redeeming quality that I see for consoles is co-op play. That's why this hits me so hard. Because for me, it's not working in IT, it's really not a big deal to take a second to check that the system requirements are met. But I can understand that a lot of console gamers don't have that kind of, like, I don't want that they don't, you know, aren't IT professionals. So I get it. You know, not everybody knows everything about system requirements, nor should they have to just play a game.
You go back to, like, I remember we learned how if the controllers got tangled. I used to go downstairs before we played and untangle them because my brother learned how to do it, and I eventually did. Like, you could pull out someone's controller if you kind of got the right angle on their
cord.
Yeah,
but that is a great story.
What I'm saying, though, is, like, you can replicate that literally by turning on an N64, which most people's work, and a lot of people still play that system to this day. If you want screen looking, go play GoldenEye.
That's a total nonsense answer. I mean, that's ridiculous. The point is that future games like Halo, which is what the article's about, are not going to have local co-op. You don't tell somebody who says, I really wanted, you know, to be able to play through the new Halo campaign with my brother. You don't go, oh, just go play GoldenEye. I mean, that's not valid.
Yeah, I suppose.
Yes, there are ways to play couch co-op. You could also just go play sports outside if you want to play with your friends. But the point is you want to play Halo 5 with your friends on the couch.
Yeah, I know what you're saying here. I guess there's certain, where I'm going with this is certain elements just with new technology, for example, and kind of what people get used to. Again, if you get used to a controller without a cord, for example, yeah, you lose that aspect where you could, you know, like take someone's, literally disconnect someone's controller. That's more difficult than it without that. And I see what you're saying, but I think people will just adjust. Like if your friend's coming over, you're playing Diablo, or you're playing Mortal Kombat, or you're playing, you know, Madden.
You're talking about the largest, like the most successful games, first person shooters. Like those are the ones that the entire genre. We're not just talking about Halo here. We're talking about future 1080p 60 games on these consoles. It's been shown multiple times now that in their split screen, they either have to heavily reduce the frame rate or resolution, or they have to, I mean, here's the thing. You don't mind right now when they're coming for your co-op, but when they come for your screen borders, like in the order, that's when you should care. I mean, it goes beyond just losing co-op, the compromises that are having to be made for these systems so that games can look as good as they should on a system that is not capable of running them to modern specs.
I mean,
The Order 1886 had giant black bars on the top and bottom of the screen.
This is true. It's like watching
that's just a bad game, isn't it? I mean,
Nothing bad about the game.
No, and I would argue it's probably so far the best looking console game to date.
It is easily one of the best looking games out there.
I guess this is fair. They did not have a lot of memory with the new consoles that came out, right? I mean, it was you filled yours up pretty quick, the Xbox One.
Well, I bought an external off the bat.
So what I'm saying is it's possible they, and to your point, they just didn't make these things strong enough. There's not enough memory. There's not enough capabilities within the console.
Well, that's the reality is when they released, they were the equivalent of a four-year-old PC.
Yeah, and so, I don't know, it may just go, like the way things are trending, it may be just more people are going to get PCs because the consoles aren't keeping up.
I don't think that's the case. I think that console players just, again, back to the ease of use. They're not worried about the frame rate.
This is a 60 frame per second game. You know what? You know how people all complained about how the dialogue in Dragon Age Inquisition looked so weird? That's because the game runs at an uncapped frame rate, but the cutscenes are at 30 frames per second. It's a big deal. People, whether or not you say the thing that bothers me here is the frame rate, your brain notices the difference. It does.
With the stuttering and the screen tears, right?
Yes. And also, the amount of precision control you have is hugely reduced with a lower frame rate. You have literally half as many frames per second of input. There's a reason that when you play it, you see professionals play games like Quake or Counter-Strike Source, they turn everything down to the minimum possible settings, and they're running it at like 300, 400 frames per second. I think that pretty much wraps up the talk on split screen. Got a little bit heated there, but you know, that's why we have a diverse cast on here. If we agreed on everything, you'd be bored as heck. So let's bring it down to the last topic. I want to wrap this up a little bit, but this is something I've been wanting to discuss for a little while now. E3 is still in the future here, and so there hasn't been a ton of news or new games coming out. Arkham Knight, I think, is coming out pretty soon here, but we haven't seen it quite yet. And so I'm just curious, what have you guys been playing lately?
Well, you know, hopefully all the good news is safe for E3. I'm definitely adding to my backlog with the Steam sale that kicked off. But right now I'm just working my way through Witcher 3 still. I put it on hold for a little bit, waiting for the console patches to finish releasing. 1.4 came out finally. Fixed a lot of the minor issues that I had with the game, so I'm back at it and going through the map and unlocking all the hidden spots.
Did you get hit by any of the like really bad bugs?
So I did get hit by the infamous save bug that's been going around, but I did catch it right off the bat. I know we talked a little bit about that before. Other than that, I had some crashing issues with the 1.3 patch. I had some issues with it kind of shutting off all of a sudden and disconnecting from my hard drive, the external one. But the last one, I mean, everything seems stable. It seems like they hit all the things that they promised they would. They added some nice little touches that you don't really notice till it's gone, like being able to interact with objects without accidentally lighting a torch or putting out a fire.
Yeah, that's really nice that they've reduced that clutter. That's so frustrating.
That made me super excited when I read that in the patch notes. Yeah, other than that, though, backlog stuff, I'm just working through some PlayStation 4 games. The Last of Us is the big one.
Is this your first playthrough?
First playthrough. Never touched it before. I almost wanted to get a PlayStation 3 just for that game. And when I saw that they remastered it, I held out. Just picked it up with the console for free.
Sure.
And you know what? The remaster, it holds up great. The graphics still look great. It's definitely one of the more interesting stories I've experienced in a video game in a while. It is very dark. It's kind of draining, so it's a bit of a chore sometimes to play through because of how, I mean, it's just bad thing after bad thing, and it is a difficult game.
You mean like
game.
It's depressing?
Depressing, yes, in a depressing
so it's
way.
It's kind of just like every time you're just getting beaten down again and again.
Right,
sure.
Right.
I can see that. You know, and I will say, though, that is, you know, I was saying before, split screen is really my main reason that I play on consoles. There is one other reason, and it's exclusives like The Last of Us. That and Bloodborne are two games that I actually have considered getting a PS4 for.
For me, I'd say Dragon Age, and this is a hard one because
you're still working away at that one?
Yeah, I'm about 50 hours in, so probably like a quarter, right? And and I think, you know, with The Witcher coming out, I mean, what I've heard is that it almost makes that game seem obsolete. I mean, I don't know what you guys feel about that. But
it certainly has turned me off to the idea of more Dragon Age DLC or going back to that game anytime soon with how much improved upon the idea The Witcher 3 is.
Sure. I didn't like Awakening really at all, but I will say, it's different enough that when the DLC comes out, I think I will be revisiting it only because, you know, party-based systems are very different from The Witcher's combat system. And honestly, you know, maybe it's because I'm playing on one of the lower difficulty levels, but The Witcher 3, the combat is not the thing that's super intriguing for me. It's the story. I mean, the combat for me is literally what I remember what the enemy's weakness is in terms of signs, and then I just hammer the quick attack button because that's where I dumped all my points.
Right.
So, you know, I do want to go back and check out Dragon Age, if only because I also enjoy the more traditional fantasy setting sometimes. Like, the Polish, like, history stuff is really, really cool. And I know that part of why it feels so original to Americans is because we don't know a lot of their folklore.
Right. Which is why exploring that world, everything's such a twist, or you don't know what's coming.
But sometimes I want to see the stuff I know. Sometimes I just want a dragon to be a dragon and a ghost to be a ghost. And, you know, I came up on traditional, like, Western fantasy type stuff. And so I miss it a little bit. Sometimes I just want it to be a little bit, just slightly more lighthearted than everything so dreary and dark and sad.
The story and characters are well done in Dragon Age. I mean, I don't know if that's going to be obsolete. I think it's just, The Witcher did like the cutscenes better.
And if there's one thing The Witcher's lacking on, and not a lot of people have pointed this out, I feel like it is character interaction. It's specifically the canned responses from NPCs that do not move in the entirety of the game. It's that is probably the biggest weakness for me coming from a game like, you know, Skyrim, that where they have scheduled NPCs, or, you know, Dragon Age, where there's so much really good character development and discussion among multiple player characters.
I'd actually, you know, in our prior discussion of The Witcher 3, I pointed that out as a positive for me personally. Just I kind of preferred the canned responses rather than the Skyrim approach where you could have a conversation that goes nowhere with every single character almost.
Instead you have a one line of dialogue that doesn't just not go anywhere. It has no bearing on anything.
Which is, you know what, then...
Oh, work.
But it's keeping me from wasting time trying to talk to every villager in town, whereas in Skyrim, I would scour every single character hoping for a quest or some piece of information, and rarely would I get any.
Yeah,
opposed to The Witcher, where you scour talking to people and you literally get nothing because
missions come from the boards. I think it just streamlines so you know to talk to... The boards direct you certainly to other characters, but
the question marks get added to your map via the board.
Right, that too.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, technically, I guess you could stumble onto some of them, but are you now... I mean, how is that any different if you're running around talking to every single NPC anyways?
I don't. That's what I'm saying. In The Witcher, like, I end up... But hit the board first, the quest direct you to who you need to talk to.
And Dragon Age balances it, I think, because you go back to that Skyhold, and then certain, like, party members will have a quest for you, and you can kind of tell, like, who to go to, I guess.
It's kind of a detriment with the loading screen, though, because you have to go back there so
I'll give you
often.
That. Although, playing on PC, that is a unique experience. Not necessarily true for everyone. But I'll agree with you. I mean, to be clear, I prefer The Witcher 3 as a game, like, overall. I just am saying that I think the character development and characters in general are a little bit stronger in Dragon Age. I mean, to be fair, some of the characters from Dragon Age are characters that they've been building up for a very long time, and Dragon Age has always been, like, the story-driven RPG outside of Mass Effect.
And then, I guess Diablo is another game, and I'm, like, level 70, and I'm trying to think I'm, like, end of Act 3.
For consoles, are they all with the expansion?
Or? Yeah. What I got was the Reaper Souls edition.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah. That's the expansion.
Yeah. So, but I assume that the 360 one wasn't, right? That was just straight up.
Oh, sure, that's possible. I guess I
when
really
it initially
say.
Launched,
How is Diablo on consoles? I've heard actually a lot of good things. It's kind of twin stick shootery, right?
I played both on the PC and both on the console, and I do prefer having a controller. I know you can use it on. Can you use it on the PC version?
You can do anything on a PC.
Okay. I mean, well,
yes, you can. I mean, I don't know that it has controller support, but I had already.
That's what I meant.
It plays well with the controller, I'd say. I mean, it's pretty intuitive once you get used to
it. No, I mean, I played it with controller back like previously, but I was using like a third party program. Okay. That's what I mean, when I say you can do anything, but you're right. I'm not entirely sure they have like first party controller support.
And that's all I meant is having played both, I do prefer the controller experience.
That's so interesting considering that it's a game designed originally for PC.
They make it work. And
they did it well.
Graphics wise, I mean, there's nothing wrong with that. And everything's running.
Honestly, that's actually a game too. Like I'm not in a hurry to finish it. Like I enjoy playing with other people. So I kind of wait around for that. Like, I don't know. It's a good experience. It's not Dragon Age in terms of the story, but it plays well. It's a fun game to play.
Sure. Well, and they are pretty different games, and I loved it. What class are you playing?
I am the witch. So, like,
The witch doctor?
No, I'm trying to... wizard. Sorry, wizard. I think I was thinking witcher.
Gotcha.
I'm a wizard, and so, a lot of lightning and dragons coming up. And...
Sure, yeah. My first main was the mage.
Did you do a playthrough with the DLC, the expansion?
Yeah, I've beaten everything with pretty much all the classes, except for, I think, the Witch Doctor, who I do not like the way he plays.
He's interesting. It's like a cool character. I just don't know if
He does feels indirect to me. It's either damage over time, or it's like an area of effect that's really slow, like the frogs.
Almost like a support character.
Yeah, and since I play almost exclusively single player in action RPGs, I was not really...
The Wizard's a good balance, where you do have...
Wizard's like broken in single player. I love his obliterate move. It's just so overpowered. I'm throwing a galaxy at you guys for the entire game.
Yeah, and so that's what I do. I usually, I have that little vortex, and then I use the lightning to get multiple attack. I mean, there is some truth to that. Like, you can kind of play it somewhat mindlessly, because I learned what each character does, and so I kind of have the same pattern. But each of the levels are very well designed. I think the enemies are really interesting and unique. And again, at the end of the day, the story isn't great, but it's compelling enough to get through. Again, I'm in no rush to finish it just because I enjoy playing it. I really like it with other players better, kind of talking to your couch or even, again, online. I think it's a great experience, and they just did it right. I mean, I think
it's really cool that they were able to make such a good transition. And to be clear, Diablo 3 was... pretty much total garbage on PC. It wasn't really until we got the big Reaper of Souls patch and the console version that it was any good. When it had the real money auction house and everything, it was bad.
Yeah, and then two 360 games. So this is going back a little bit. I just downloaded Just Cause 2. I'm interested in that just because another one's coming out. And then Fallout New Vegas. I think I should play that before Fallout 4.
Oh, yeah.
4
have you not played New Vegas yet?
I have about like 20 hours in, maybe a little bit less.
Okay, sure. And what about the other?
Just Cause I just downloaded. I haven't played yet. It was free with gold.
Okay. Seriously, if you just have some time to burn, Just Cause 2 is like the game to play. I just love that game.
Yeah, so I'm playing
blowing
that one.
Crap up.
The thing with New Vegas is I think it's probably a better game, but I don't like the setting as much. I like the Washington, D.C. setting much better than Arizona, California, wherever.
Well, I would agree with you as far as setting goes with New Vegas, although I would say literally everything else is better. I mean,
they improved upon the mechanics.
Yeah, the mechanics are better. The faction system is vastly better. The story in 3 is garbage, and the story in New Vegas is very interesting. I mean, the story in 3 has to be.
But it had Liam Neeson as your dad.
Oh, my God. Shh. He's only 20 hours in.
There were some, I would say, with 3, there were good things to discover. I mean, I think that's kind of the
Have you finished 3?
I'm on the last, like, last level of Broken Steel or whatever.
But
the
you
DLC.
Finished the main story. Yes, okay, yes. So never mind. I'm sorry. So you do know that Liam Neeson is your dad and that it's the stupidest.
Well, you know that from the get-go when you're the child and the...
Oh, yeah, you're right. You're right. I'm sorry. I guess it's not a good story. I'd forgotten about
it. It's not a good story.
Because I have a mod that lets me skip the intro because it's like 10 minutes long.
No, I like the. I mean, the story's not great. It's about discovering stuff, and hopefully, I think Vegas probably is a big game. You're right; it's better. I just don't. I'm not compelled to go back to it because I don't find the setting that exciting.
Sure.
I guess. Yeah.
Yeah. So I've been playing a couple things myself. I've also kind of taken a break from The Witcher 3. I got to about the Bloody Baron. For those who are that are playing it, and realized that I have the experience bug, which. Oh God, it's actually worse than the save corruption bug if you don't have a backup, because basically I'm already X distance into the story and I've not been receiving proper experience from quests, and so my character is underleveled and there's just no way to fix it because you can't just grind from monsters.
Right, and it was an interesting response that the developers gave because they just told people that, oh, don't worry, play through the game and you'll be at the level you need to be, which, I mean, speaks to the amount of content in there. But it is also disappointing from the perspective of you won't be as powerful as you could have been or.
Well, and it goes beyond that. It's not just that. I've realized now why I'm pretty not very far in, and it's because I had mentioned a couple times that I had gone to start quests and realized I was like 8 levels too low and I couldn't figure out why. So I went and did every single question mark. Finally was able to, because as I understand, the bug really only affects like the, not necessarily main missions, but the bigger missions.
Sure.
And I did every single side thing so I could just barely do the Bloody Baron stuff. But this does explain why, like, there are so many skulled enemies. I mean, I can kill some of them, but there are just so many, like, what is it, the red dot? I'm trying to remember what the symbol is for
too
high level.
It is a red skull with question marks, I think, or something. But now, what the glitch itself does... Do you get no experience, or do you not get the amount
you're
supposed to?
Well, here's the thing. I don't know. I just know my character is way, 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 way too low level for what I've done.
Okay.
For the amount of hours I've put in and all the content I've done. I went on the forums and just browsed, and they were saying, I don't want to spoil anything.
Sure.
For the distance that you are in and the areas and side quests that you have done, this is where you should be, and here's where you are.
Go ahead. Sorry, Tom.
Is it fixed yet? I mean,
everything is patched now. That's what we were talking about earlier. That's why. So I'm breaking now.
Although there are bigger patches on the way too.
Yeah. Are you worried though that you're going to get? I mean, how many hours are you in roughly?
Like 20 or 30.
Okay. Because I'm saying
I've done like every single side thing.
Yeah. Because I wonder. I worry that you get 75 hours and you're going to find something else that's wrong with it.
All the major bugs have been patched out now. We would know about. Trust me. The internet is going to do a good job of vetting if the bugs are
there.
And
another one's coming. You said, Max.
Yeah. They said that
another console one, right? I think
across the board.
Oh, okay.
1.
Are there more
5,
big bugs that we're looking at?
I thought I read an article that said 2 more are on the way and 1's pretty close.
Well,
so.
I'm going to keep this thing on my shelf, but I have been occupying myself with some other stuff. I got to play some Rebuild 3, Gangs of Deadsville. I don't know if you guys have played any of the Rebuild games. I'm a big fan. They used to be just Newground Flash games, basically.
Okay.
And they're kind of in the vein of Civilization, but you are banding together survivors in a like burnt out post-apocalyptic zombie town, and you have to take over individual buildings, and you can upgrade them, all your survivors at different levels, and it's a lot of management and just kind of like 4X, but it's like baby's first 4X, which is perfect for me because I don't have the patience to play a full-fledged like Civilization type game. I never finish a match. And so I really have been enjoying the third one. It actually released on Steam. It's got the same kind of Flash-looking graphics, but I would say it's definitely worth the money. I mean, I've already put in, God, like 2 days of play just because you can run it on a toaster, and so there's no reason not to try it. If you have a cheap Windows tablet or just, you know, a laptop just laying around, I would highly recommend just giving it a try.
I was going to say, it looks like it could almost be an iOS game.
Yeah, it does, and, you know, it may end up coming to iOS. I'm not really sure, but I've been really enjoying that one on Steam quite a bit.
And it's on sale right now. Move fast. You get it 15% off.
Oh, yeah. That's what I'm talking about. And then also I went back actually yesterday and reinstalled Minecraft. I'm a big fan. I've talked to you guys before about how much I love modding.
Yeah.
And Minecraft is one of the best games I've ever played for its mod community and just the mods available. I play with the Direwolf 20 pack. It's it adds in tons of like magic, alchemy, automation. Right now I have a system that automatically mines for me, takes the ores, puts them through a macerator that doubles the output. Then the output is automatically reinserted into a smelter, which then melts down the the powders into ingots. Then I can auto-process those ingots into different designs, different items that I have programmed into the system. And it's all through this modding. And I love that kind of just insane automation. I love just, you know, just sitting back and watching all of the lights blink. And
the genius behind Minecraft is just the ability to really create whatever sort of process you can dream up.
Well, and to be clear, what I just described is not possible in vanilla. That is all modded.
Oh, but it is a heavily modded game, is it not, for the PC crowd?
That's what I was saying before.
Right.
It has one of the most uniquely excellent mod scenes. I mean, just a ton of crazy in-depth work done. Because let's remember, Minecraft is a Java game. It is not easy to work with a pre-existing Java. I know it's easy to make additions in some cases, but these guys are making custom APIs and stuff for these for their mods, and so it's really quite impressive stuff. And then lastly, I finally have gotten around to finishing up GTA 5.
that's a good game.
You completed the story for the first time, or
yes.
What? Okay, what did you think?
I liked it. I'd say it's probably tied for my second favorite GTA game with Vice City. San Andreas is still my favorite.
I know the PC crowd just made a mod of Vice City for GTA 5.
Oh, I'll have to look into that. I haven't checked that out yet. I haven't really messed with the modding yet because I'm not really happy with that community.
Okay.
That modding community, between the viruses and like they've had games break and like people are getting banned from online.
That would be the biggest concern.
You know, I do a lot of modding and this is not what a healthy modding community looks like. So I worry a little bit, but you know, we'll see. Maybe it'll get better down the line because I really do want to try that Just Cause 2 mod, which actually is what inspired me to reinstall last week. And so it is a blast. I thought the ending was satisfying.
It's no Red Dead.
It's not Red Dead. And also, after the story, and I guess this is true of most GTA games, but I felt it most poignantly with this. Unless you're playing GTA Online, I really didn't feel like there was any reason to stick around and do the collectible stuff in the single player.
I don't know. I think that because after you beat the game, you have that murder mystery you can solve. And
do you? I haven't run into anything
peyote.
Like that. I've been
there's the peyote.
Around.
No, there is.
I've been
sprinting around.
There
are
like
some post-game
days. All I found is Trevor's mom so far.
Yeah, there's some more discovering for you to do,
which I have no idea. I finished that quest line, and I still have no idea what was going on, or if I don't even know.
The problem with that game is that Trevor is so much better of a character than the other two, at least in my mind.
I don't know. I think Michael's
more
the strongest
entertaining,
character.
Certainly.
I think Michael's the strongest because the thing about Trevor is like he's great, but he's also like there's a certain amount of like cognitive dissonance going on with his character where it's like you love him but you hate what he's doing. You know what I mean?
And yeah.
I you're right. Trevor. I think it's a toss up. Trevor and Michael. Did you like Michael?
I thought he was fine. I thought he was a better character in the beginning, and then kind of just, I guess he didn't do
You know,
much
you're
for
not
me
wrong.
After,
his character did kind of, like, peter out a little bit towards
and
the
for,
end.
Franklin's for me, entertaining. It's just you don't care about his story.
Well, Franklin is a foil for the audience, so he can explain the relationship for us by asking our questions.
Because Franklin kept the issue with me, or for me, was that he kept participating in all this stuff despite the issues he had with everything going on.
Yeah. He's very high. His dialogue is very, like, holier than thou, high and mighty stuff, and I do not where he was coming from.
It was contrasting and calling attention to the relationship he had with, you know, his criminal friends and how he was trying to distance himself.
Right,
he kind of got
right.
sucked into something.
But again, he just got
in.
Sucked into something else.
Yeah.
Well,
but
worse,
I think the other problem with him was that it just didn't feel like the heists and stuff. I didn't understand why some, you know, small-time criminal is suddenly jumping up to minor spoilers, running around with a minigun, you know?
Right.
It's Grand
it's
Theft
GTA.
Auto.
Yeah,
I know. It's just, you know, I would have liked to see, I mean, San Andreas had, you know, a really excellent black lead, and I guess I just expected a lot out of him.
Franklin's dialogue's good with his friend. I thought those were fun.
Lamar.
Lamar. Franklin's great, but he's got nothing on CJ. That's all I'm saying.
Are you excited about the ill-gotten gain stuff, or do you not care about that?
The online just isn't doing it for me. I mean, the heist took too long to come out. I think that my interest for that petered out. And
if it worked, would you like it?
I think it works fine.
It's worked for a while. I'll always have
beef with the matchmaking in GTA Online unless they revolutionize it, because, you know, it's like Call of Duty. You hop into a matchmaking game and you're instantly in a session practically. Sure. It fills it with people and you're good to go. GTA, I spend more time waiting to find someone to play with than I do.
I mean, there's more modes and stuff like that. There's races and there's
deathmatch. Yeah, there's a ton of modes. But, there's mini games within GTA Online, not really modes per se.
See, I love GTA Online. I disagree with that. I don't know if I care about the ill-gotten gains like pack, but I thought they did it well. I like the races. I like the deathmatches.
I like the heists.
Yeah.
And that's it. I like the heists. I don't like the races. I like the mini games that involve racing. Like, I like the where you're on like a Sanchez and you're trying to outrun an 18-wheeler. I think that's fun. Or like when you're on a motorcycle and you're trying to outrace a jet that's trying to take you out. That's cool. I like those cat and mouse game modes, but like a race? No, thank you. I'll play Burnout if I want to race somebody.
See, I like the map. I guess that's why I like the races. Like, it's fun, like, whipping around LA, I guess.
I do like the GTA races where you can use the guns and try to, blow the cars off the track and everything.
And honestly, I just don't like racing games very much at all.
Do you like the survival? I feel like the survival mode's pretty sweet.
That's okay. I like a structured competition that's not just something I can get anywhere else. So I like stuff like the skydiving type stuff.
Yeah, that's
I like
cool.
the cat and mouse type stuff. I like objective based stuff that involves actually running around and shooting, like the heists.
Yeah, those are
but
fun.
But no, I don't. If it's something that you can do better in another game.
Yeah.
You're right. It is cool that they have guns, but I'd rather play Mario Kart than run around with a pistol in a GTA car.
You can get everything in one.
But I hear what you're saying. And I'm actually with Max on this one overall. GTA Online has not done a ton for me. I think part of it is that I don't have a big group of friends that I can regularly play with.
Right.
You really need to have
three or four
friends.
You know, that is another thing that could feed back into our, and I'll make this very quick, but that could feed back into our discussion about the lack of split screen. You know, if you're going to take one thing away, make damn sure that you significantly improve on the experience that you're providing with us for the multiplayer, the online only aspect. And with GTA, it has not been there for me as far as the matchmaking goes. And same with Destiny, like put the matchmaking in for the raid so people can play, you know, even if you think they're going to fail, let them try. Cause people have been blowing the expectations on Destiny out of the water.
And just so people know, cause it's absolutely relevant. What are you playing GTA 5 on?
Oh, Xbox One, yeah.
Okay, so the matchmaking on Xbox One is what you have an issue with.
Yes,
we don't know for sure that that's true of PC or PS4.
That's true. That's true.
I mean, I would expect PC at very least has entirely different servers, so I would expect it to be very different.
Right.
But yeah, so we've been playing some okay stuff. Really, I think we're all just, waiting with bated breath for E3. There's going to be some really big announcements. A couple things have been pushed back now, which I think is a good thing. I was a little bummed because you had mentioned to me earlier Crackdown is being pushed back.
Yeah, Crackdown and Scalebound, they're going to be at GamesCon.
Which is a bit of a disappointment, but that said, I think that the docket was a little heavy, especially on Microsoft games, and I'm kind of okay with that.
Well, I mean, really quick, like round tables, but what's everyone's, we'll be talking about next week, what's everyone's most anticipated thing they want to hear about at E3?
It's hard for me because Fallout 4 was kind of the thing I was looking for.
Yeah, that'll be this Sunday.
Yeah, I mean, I'm trying to think that. Like, I feel like pretty satisfied with that. I'm trying to think of what I'd want out of E3. I think it's more going to be my reaction to what comes out and kind of like
the surprises.
Yeah, the surprises. And is there anything that I'd be more hyped about than Fallout 4? I guess.
Mine is definitely getting to finally see the gameplay from No Man's Sky. I really just want to know what it is so that everyone can understand that it's not what they're excited about and just shut up about it.
Yeah.
I'm so tired of hearing about No Man's Sky. There's no way it can be everything that people are saying it is. And so I just want to know what it really is. Because right now we've been given a vague promise of interplanetary travel and also Minecraft and also beautiful graphics and also it's an art game, but also it's about spaceships. So I don't know. I mean, that means nothing. That could be a million things. Maybe only one of those features is what's going to be in the final game.
I hope they keep the spaceships in it.
The thing that I want is the transition between planets. That's what I think.
That's what I wanted in Battlefront.
That, and I would really like a game that is like, you know, Rust or one of the other survival games where you can go on the planet, you're in first person or whatever, third person, I don't care.
Don't starve.
Hacking down the... No. In space. No. I'm talking about a real survival game, not like a 2D, like... I mean, I want a first person immersive survival game that does it well.
Sure.
Which we have not seen yet. We've seen a lot of half measures like DayZ, like right. Rust, like the Stomping Grounds, like Ark, but what we're not seeing is the definitive one. And I think this is an opportunity, since this is supposed to be procedurally generated and there is supposed to be some amount of like resource gathering going on in it. I'm presuming that since you travel between different planets, it sounds a lot like a roguelite or like, you know, survival-ish game.
Time will tell.
Absolutely.
Supposed to release at the end of the year, right?
So. Yeah. So how about you? What are you excited about?
I'd like to see some surprises. I definitely want to hear a bit about the next Hitman game. I was thinking that a Splinter Cell would be cool. We're due for another Splinter Cell follow-up. I really like the last one. But the game that, despite all the excitement I got from Fallout 4 and everything else out there, I really want to see the Battlefront gameplay, because that is my most anticipated game.
Sure.
And the only thing that could blow that out of the water is if Bethesda comes out with a new Elder Scrolls announcement.
Yeah, and you know what? Let's all remember, it is possible that we will see two announcements. I doubt it, but it is possible.
I think Dishonored 2 would be more likely.
That's what I actually, to be honest, I'd rather see Dishonored 2 than a new Elder Scrolls.
And I'd be on board with that.
And to be clear, the Elder Scrolls is my favorite game series of all time. I'd still rather see the next Dishonored, because I love the world they created, and they had so much in the books and the side lore. I want to see more of that world.
If you haven't played it, get on it.
And that's going to bring us to a close today. Thanks so much for tuning in to 105 The Ticket Video Game Podcast. If you want to hear more of our shows, you can check us out on iTunes or at 105theticket.com. Please rate and let us know what you think, or if you have any other ideas for topics, let us know. Thank you. Game on.